Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host Dave Dufour,
with Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
To the Athletic NBA Show. This is not the Saturday Slamma Jam. I apologize to everyone tuning in for that show. This is Nerder, She Wrote. We swapped days this week with Andrew and the gang. I'm Dave DeFore. Seth and Mo are here, and we have a 2-2 NBA Finals. The Bucks have won the last two games in Milwaukee. And fellas, I guess the question is, where are we now? Aside from going to Phoenix, right?
Besides you just literally setting the table, that's exactly where we are now. It's funny because I find this series very interesting. I've gone into it with the Bucks had more questions that they needed to answer in this series than I felt like the Suns did. And now, after four games, I feel like it's flipped. And it's now the Bucks have more answers and the Suns have more questions. And, you know, I just think that's where it's gotten really interesting, is this whole thing has kind of flipped on its head a little bit after four games.
So to some extent, I agree with that. The part I agree with is the single biggest question about the series was like it's you know, especially after the block, it's sort of hard to remember. But remember, we were wondering, like, is Giannis going to be healthy enough to even contribute in the series? Like, that was a legitimate question. And I think that has been asked and answered. At this point, you know, game two, he looked better than game one, and then games three and four looked much better than either of those games. I will say, though, that I think the same questions are still there for both teams. It's just on a game-to-game basis, who kind of wins. I don't want to say the coin flip, but who gets the advantage? Milwaukee's always going to have the advantage on the interior. They're always going to have the offensive rebounding edge on Phoenix, especially Phoenix without Dario Saric only having one real big. But the question is, do they get beat, you know, 10-6 in offensive rebounds, or do they get beat 14-3? Do they give up 7 offensive rebounds in the last 5 minutes of the game like they did in game four? If they're competitive, then I think they have a really good shot at winning the series if they get their faces beat in by Milwaukee on the glass.
Yeah, Though I think when we look at it kind of like the way you're saying is sort of recency bias and things like that, and these are just kind of the big questions in every game we're going into, I feel like the Bucks have found that they can dominate more with their size as this has gone on. I don't feel like they always do.
Right.
You know, and I feel like I think it's kind of like we all know it. I mean, they were doing it in the Brooklyn series. They were doing it against Atlanta. We're like, yeah, this is what you should do. And then it's like, we're not going to do that. It's along those lines where it's like, no. And then they've almost kind of, it feels like every series they have to find their identity. And it takes a couple of games for them to do it. And I feel like they've really kind of found it.
But they've also forgotten it again once they found it.
Well, we'll find out tonight when they play. But it seems like they've gotten it, you know. They got in exactly how they want to play. I think they figured out how they want to defend the pick and roll. I think they have the understanding of how they want to attack offensively. I think their whole kind of plan now is coming together, whereas I feel like the Suns had a better plan coming in, and now I'm feeling like it's sort of like, okay, now we have to figure out things. And some of that is the Saric injury, you know, and you know, now you got to figure out, we're going to have to go small for some minutes. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to handle that situation. All of those things are playing into it. And I think that's part of it. I don't look at it so much as recency bias, as much as I just think the Bucks have now figured out this is what we need to do to win.
The flip side of that is I don't like the offensive rebound is sort of the big thing for Milwaukee. The big thing for Phoenix is getting the other guys involved. You know, Mikal Bridges took 4 shots in each game in Milwaukee. And is that something that Milwaukee has figured out? Maybe a little. They did a better job. They only allowed 6 corner 3 attempts in 2 games in Milwaukee total. Like not average, like 4 in game 3, 2 in game 2.
And to interrupt, because I'm very happy because I found the stat, none in the second half. I'm very proud of myself.
And
wow. Yeah. Mo with a stat bomb on the pod.
David. but is that like a thing that Phoenix is going to be able to do better, or is that something Milwaukee has solved? I think it's more towards, again, it's a swing factor. If Phoenix can get back a little bit to not just Devin Booker bucket getting, but Devin Booker getting buckets and also driving and kicking, or drawing extra help and getting the Bucks in rotation. If that can be in just a little more balance in Phoenix, then you get Ayton some shots, you get Bridges some shots, you get Cam Johnson more looks. Jay Crowder is going to take shots, whether he's open or not. So that's the sort of the lesser part of it. But Bridges especially seems like a very big, you know, swing factor in these playoffs, getting him involved offensively. So, yeah, that's a question for Phoenix, but I'm not sure it's a question that Milwaukee has solved other than they just did it well in games 3 and 4. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's
No, go ahead.
Some of it is Phoenix is their own enemy at this point, right? And that happens in every team in every series. I think some of it too, in terms of just Milwaukee sort of adjusting their lineups, putting Jrue Holiday on Chris Paul much more. You know, I think there's not their lineups, their matchups. You know, Holiday on Chris Paul a little bit more has hounded him there. That's another dude that doesn't fully create, that creates for Bridges as well. You know, that's a guy that's struggling right now and not able to create at the level that we're used to. I think all of those things play into it. And I love the stuff you said about Booker and the stuff you tweeted of his potential assists stats over the past few games really dwindling. That's an important aspect of it.
So I guess I want to start with the elephant in the room for Phoenix. What is happening with Chris Paul? Is this, I don't want to speculate about injury, but this is abnormal. Is this that the Bucks defense has kind of sorted him out? Are they just really bothering him? Nothing stands out to me. This is just uncharacteristic. The turnovers, it's just so odd.
The weird
from
thing
him.
About game 4, especially with their having, you know, the 3-day break, is he looked tired. I don't know what. Either tired or he just looked like he didn't have anything in his legs. He didn't have really a whole lot of burst. He didn't have, you know, the lift on his jump shot he normally does. He was pretty passive for a lot of the game. And, you know, some of that, a good chunk of that, you got to give credit to Jrue Holiday. Like, obviously, his offense has drawn a lot of criticism this series, not just the shot making, but some of the shot selection. But he has been, starting in game 2, he has been tremendous defensively. And like some of that has been his ability to kind of pressure Chris Paul and pressure him while being much larger, which probably, you know, like a, you know, like body shots in boxing probably, you know, takes your legs a little bit.
Yeah. And picking him up much earlier, picking him up in the backcourt, you know, and making him expend energy a little bit more, I think is another part of it, getting to his leg. I have questions, you know, like I don't know if it's true or not, but the story of his wrist injury and things like that, like he's bobbling the ball a lot on dribbles, you know.
You see him working it a lot, right? I don't know if you guys noticed that. And I try not to like get too, you know, because, you know, you get sore or whatever, but he seems to be working that wrist a lot, you know, shaking the hand out. And then, you know, that got me thinking about the shoulder. Like maybe this is just like, you know, remnants from that. I don't know, but Mo, I'm with you. You picked up on that too. I mean,
it just seems weird because it's just I'm seeing some of the stuff, the turnover on the crossover against Giannis with 30 seconds left when they were down two that led to the fast break to put the Bucks up four. It just seemed weird because it felt like he crossed over and just never had it, you know, and just lost the ball. And it's just something about it feels odd. But also the fact is 15 turnovers over three games. That's insane from Chris Paul, you know, and I think it's a really weird thing. I mean, they're not going to win if that's what he's going to be doing. If he's going to drop five turnovers each night right now, they're going to be hard pressed in that situation to win this game.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's something we've talked about before. It's something that I wrote about yesterday on The Athletic, is that's been one of the, like, the best features of Chris Paul's career is his ability for his teams to win the turnover battle, to win the turnover game. Both his ability to keep his own team from turning the ball over and also helping to force turnovers. And I think that over four games, I think that Phoenix has turned the ball over 19 times more than Milwaukee. And, you know, that Milwaukee getting some extra shots via offensive rebounds is to be expected. Milwaukee getting five extra attempts per game because of turnovers, that's surprising. And especially given how really mediocre, and mediocre is probably being generous, Milwaukee's half court offense has been, giving up those live ball turnovers, it's even more worrisome. I mean, again, I wrote about this yesterday. Milwaukee is scoring literally half a point more on live ball transition opportunities than they are in the half court. Half a point, that's, you know, you do that 10 times a game, that's 5 points. 5 points is a huge margin in these games. So that's something that is really worrisome. And as you said, Mo, if that continues, it's going to be really hard for Phoenix to shot make their way out of that.
Are we just seeing the home team? Like, is this just the home team bump the last two games? Or do you guys feel like there's more to it? We know role players play better at home than they do on the road. Pat Connaughton was that the best game of his career in game four? I mean, certainly the most important game that he's ever performed that well in. I mean, just was fantastic. Is this going to be a series that comes down to the first team that has role players show up on the road wins?
Or Phoenix wins by default, if not.
Or Phoenix wins by default, right. That's a good point.
No, it's certainly going to help. You know, like those guys, yeah. I mean, obviously, right? Like brilliant analysis, Mo, right? The role players helping on the road is going to help a team win. It'll make a difference, but I think it's also getting your star guys to really step up too. Like Drew Holiday's been great defensively, you know, and hasn't shot the ball well offensively. That's fine. I'd rather he maybe recognize some of the bad shots he's taking and look for something else. And get going on that necessarily, because maybe he's not going to have it this series and get hot. But some of the shots he's taking, I'm like, all right, well, that was just a bad shot.
It's dump and chase offense.
If only this was hockey.
Well, no, there are long stretches of the game where that's Milwaukee's best offense, is like chuck it at the backboard and go get it. And
yeah, no, I mean, yes, but when they don't, it becomes like, exactly. All right, well, now we've just wasted a possession. And as you said, just 5 points can be the difference, right? It's especially in the finals, especially in the playoffs, it can come down to just four or five possessions being the whole difference in the game. And so just, I would kind of, if he can do that and the Bucks don't have role players really step up on the road, I still think Milwaukee can win the game. If Chris Paul handles his turnovers, you know, a little bit better, you know, I think Phoenix could win a road game in Milwaukee, you know, maybe necessarily without the star, without the role player stepping up. It's I'm not ready to say fully it's a role player series
yet. Are we calling DeAndre Ayton a role player still, or is he above that line at this point?
Nah.
Cause that's
no. And the fact
it,
I'm
it
saying
certainly
no.
feels like he's above it.
Yeah.
And not me, right? I was like, well, it certainly feels well, no, like but, it. Mo's like, no, definitely not. That's
it's because it's how he it's how his offense is set right. up. It's fed to him. So it looks like a role player type guy, but he's so important for them in terms of everything. you know, defensively, offensively. You know, it's he makes the engine. You know, he's the spark plug of the engine. I think that's the right car analogy. I don't know cars. But the mm-hmm. but he's an important piece to it. I wouldn't say he's the engine itself, but it's important. So I think he's more than a role player. He's being played like it. They're not, you know, he's not getting the opportunities, but he's more important than a role player. And the fact that I'm saying this about DeAndre Ayton is huge.
No, the reason I wanted to bring him up is I thought that was a really interesting aspect of game four. And I think I imagine we'll get to the foul trouble in game three. But in game four, that was the first time all playoffs I can remember. You know, I think we've talked about all year when we've talked about the Suns is like we want to see DeAndre Ayton play with force, and he always doesn't. Game four was the first time where he was like, you know, he was taking little flippy shots around the basket, right? There's one time he tried to finish with authority and an apparition came from out of nowhere and he ate it. But still, I was like, okay, well, you try to finish like that every time. Well, Giannis does not make that play every time. I think that's an important thing is if he is playing with force around the basket, especially offensively, like that's, you know, but that's why I asked, is that a role player thing? Because that's going to be a pretty important thing for Phoenix to get some easy baskets of their own.
Unfortunately, I think that's him right now. And he has to develop playing with force, right? Like I tweeted it out a few times. He had a post up on Connaughton, made it, but a fadeaway jump hook. He had a post up on Drew Holiday, went to the jump hook again. Like it's that he got an opportunity for a lob. Came down with it because I don't think he could have dunked it when he caught it. To be fair, he came down with it,
right.
Had Connaughton on him, and went for a bunny and missed it. And I'm like, I'd rather him get an offensive foul, and we don't want him to draw fouls, but I'd rather him take the offensive foul and play with force than not. But I think that's going to be more of an off-season development. I don't think we're going to see that. Change over
been in so in, consistent in, though through up until game four throughout the playoffs.
But I think that this is a coaching thing for them though, right? I think that if you think back to that Monty Williams mic'd up, right? What was he telling him? Hey, you might not be able to affect the game on the stat sheet, but you can do it with force. So I think that this is something obvious that they know it internally and Monty knows it. And I think that he's trying to sort of get that out of him in this series. And we've seen it here and there, but I think you're absolutely right. If he is going to, you know, do the turnaround bunnies, they need more than that. And Mo, I'm with you. I'd rather see him get that Shaquille O'Neal, I just threw this guy into the stands offensive foul than, you know, have little Pat Connaughton. Are we still calling him short arm Pat Connaughton?
Well, you just called him little.
Pat Connaughton underneath the basket. Well, compared to DeAndre Ayton.
He's only short armed if you're testing vertical. If you're actually testing standing reach, he is not short armed. Do we need to explain that?
I want to talk about the Giannis block. No. I think that's everybody knows that. I want to talk about the Giannis block. We don't give Giannis enough credit for his defensive feel. And that was like a prime example. When he turned, he was just looking for Ayton's hands. He was like, well, I know the ball is going to meet Ayton. So I'm going to meet his hands. I thought that was like his explanation of that even was great. But just that play itself has rightly been shared everywhere. And everyone sees it for how amazing it is.
Any sense.
But
it
the slow motion when
sense.
You watch his... It
doesn't.
I love that play so much. I've probably watched it about 50
like
times.
The thing, the awareness piece that you're so talking about is like, okay, I'm not going to be able to track the ball, but I know where the ball's going to get to. So let me jump to that point at the rim. Okay, that's fine. Physically go do that now. Like he just, you know, in the slow, like maybe it's because of the slow mo, but like how he generates enough, like, speed and power off of like a reverse blind pivot onto his bad knee and then covers not just vertical but horizontal distance to get there with room to spare. Like it looked like I said, you know, it looked like in like Super Smash Brothers or something where you can like double jump. Like he went up and then I'm going to keep going. Like not just I'm going to keep going, but I'm going to jump again from here. And it's not possible.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
That's what scouts would incorrectly just say, quick twitch. Like, you know what they mean, but it's not necessarily the right word for what's physically happening. But the mental part of that, and then to be able to also have the physical part, I mean, that was a genius level defensive IQ play and also just a spectacular physical wonder. I really have watched it like 50 times. Spectacular.
It's unbelievable. This is why we call him the Greek freak, because he's a freak and it's a freakish right. play. My favorite thing of what he said was, I was expecting to get dunked on, like, but he was still willing to go. We know a lot of big guys who would just turn and look and it's over. You know, they wouldn't. He's willing to come over and have that humility, willing to fail a little bit or anything like that. Obviously, this turned out to be the best case scenario in that block. The one thing I'll say is, Booker threw that a tad high, and if you watch the camera replay on the basket, you can just see it. Like, Ayton literally just has it on his fingertips. Like, Ayton did a hell of a job to catch it and come to get it, and then unfortunately Giannis comes in and just says, that thing's mine. And it's just an unbelievable play. There's not enough we can talk about it in every platitude. It's just amazing.
It reminded me of the Bam block on Tatum on the dunk last year, like just time and scored, you know, obviously this is in the finals, but the timing on this is right up there with that. And I mean, the LeBron chase down, which we of course all remember. It's one of the greatest blocks I've ever seen when you consider time, score, degree of difficulty. And you know, the fact that this is DeAndre Ayton, it's not like that was a guard up there. Just fantastic. Giannis has really been just on another planet. If the Bucks win the title, there's no way he's not the Finals MVP, right? Like, I see a lot of people saying, "Well, maybe Middleton has a chance." I don't see how that's possible.
I do think it's funny we've gotten this far without mentioning that name. This is the really interesting thing about, like, you know, we Giannis, because he is and he's not the only one, but because he is a superstar out of a non-traditional sort of mold. He's not, you know, a wing ISO scorer or in this day and age, a guard ISO scorer. It's like focusing on the things he can't do, which is, you know, fair enough. But, you know, but there's today nobody else is making that defensive play. But you then pair him with a guy who's maybe not overall on the level of a, you know, of a Durant or a Curry or something like that. But in terms of as a creative clutch shot make, difficult shot maker, Chris Middleton is every bit of that. And so you pair this sort of the non-traditional superstar with the non-traditional number two, who's sort of almost more overqualified on the ball than a lot of number twos are. And it just fits perfectly. And like, I don't think Giannis can find himself in position to make those plays if he doesn't have that with him, because that so perfectly complements, like, the holes in his game to have this, you know, elite shot maker and a guy who has been an elite clutch shot maker, an elite playoff shot maker. You think about it, the number of big shots Chris Middleton has hit in the playoffs, despite really fairly limited playoff experience and success. It's a pretty impressive resume.
Yeah, no. And he takes tough shots, but I almost feel like he takes too many tough shots. And that to a degree, is that a little bit of a crutch? You know, like, it's great when he hits them, but when he has those nights where he's off, like, I worry about it. Sorry, Mo.
No, I mean, it's an important point you make, Dave. It's, you know, he takes tough shots. But in crunch time, they're all going to be tough shots most of the time. Right. That's right. You need a tough shot maker. In crunch time, that's what Devin Booker is for the Suns. You know, when CP's on, he can do that, you know, and things like that. That's part of the hole with Giannis's game, is he's not a tough shot maker. you know, and in that sense. And I think it's a very important thing. The distinction is like Giannis is going to take you 45 minutes into the game. In a close game, Middleton's got to take you the last three. And you need Giannis's 45 minutes to get to those last three of Middleton. But when Middleton, I feel so much more comfortable when Middleton has the ball and is trying to make things happen at the end of games versus Giannis in that instance. You know, Giannis getting it on the roll, Giannis getting it on the move, different story. But Stagnic plays, let's go to Middleton. I think that's who you got to play through if you're the Bucks down the stretch. And I think we've talked about this all year. I mean, this is just what we're seeing in fruition. And it's kind of cool to watch it. It's that's right, man. Game winner against Miami in game one. Hit big shots in the Brooklyn
series. Winner against Brooklyn.
A series winner.
Right.
Yeah. Big games at the end of the Atlanta series with Giannis out, you know. Add this game four to his resume. I had a friend text me going like, do you trust Middleton? I go like, I don't have a reason not to. He's done it every rounds in the playoffs so far. I can't – it's not a matter of not trusting him down the stretch. I mean,
he had 40. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like –
right. We're talking about him like he scores he had 18. Oh, it's a nice little game.
Like, okay. Yeah.
On jump shots. It was a fantastic game. So I guess I want to take an assessment from you guys on what you've seen from Milwaukee, in particular over the course of the series, like the difference in the first two and the next two. Mo, you have been on this train all year. That the Bucks were doing the right thing in the regular season. They were mixing it up. They were mixing up coverages. Their offense was different. They weren't just running into a wall over and over again. You feel pretty good about how they've been. And of course, the series is tied 2-2, so you have to feel good about that. But like just on a granular level, you feel pretty good about their game plan and like what they're doing?
Yeah, I'm actually... Yeah, you know, this is what's wild is I'm actually at the point where I'm picking them to win the series. You know, I think everything they've done, you know, has led up to this kind of stuff. They've made changes, you know, literally from game one in the series all the way on down in how they're handling the pick and roll, how they're coveraging, how they're changing matchups. They're putting different guys here. They're picking up guys full court offensively. They're playing through Giannis. You know, and then getting it to Middleton, trying to get opportunities to get Drew Holiday going, trying to find chances for the other guys. I honestly just like everything they've done. And this is what we've said. I said, you can't play the same way all year and think you could change it up in the playoffs. And I think we're just seeing them all that work from the regular season, all that hand wringing fans had, like, oh my God, the Bucks and da da da, and this, oh no.
Oh, they were only the third seed. You know, right.
Like, what are we going to, like, oh my God, type of deal. I think the thing you're looking at is this is all coming to fruition now. It's playing the long game, and now we're here we are in the finals.
I think we need to make a distinction between offensively and defensively because I don't love their plan offensively. Like again, we've talked about their half court offense has been poor all playoffs.
Yes,
and it's been poor despite having talent advantages. So I think that we can be critical of you know, they end up in a lot of these Middleton and Holiday tough shot scenarios, in part because they, you know, there was a stretch in game three where they actually had some like side to side motion in their offense and got into some easy stuff and put Phoenix in rotations and stuff like that. But really, like they're scoring by, you know, the free points. They're scoring offensive rebounds in transition. And when those things don't happen, they really can't, even with Giannis out there. So, but that aside, like defensively, I think you're absolutely right, Mo. They're trying a lot of different things. The overwhelming thing on both ends of the floor to me is this is a tough team. They are like, even if they don't have the greatest, like the plan might not be working or might not be the greatest. They are just, you know, you saw it in games one and two where they were down big in the second half and were like, nope, we're still playing. We're coming back. You're going to have to beat us. And that, you know, that's some of that is Giannis's personality. Frankly, a lot of that is you know, Middleton is a quiet guy, but he is extremely tough. The Holiday is, you know, Tucker. These are guys who have been through it and, you know, what, even if the plan isn't the best plan, they are going to keep executing the plan to the best of their abilities for 48 minutes. And that is, I don't want to say it's unusual, but the degree to which they don't concede really at any point is unusual.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
So I guess let's look ahead to game five. We're recording this Friday afternoon, so the show's going to drop Saturday morning. Game five, Saturday night in Phoenix. I think if you've lost the last two games, it's up to you to make adjustments and to counter. So let's talk about it. What is Phoenix going to do in game five to try to counteract some of the struggles that they've been having the last couple of games? I mean, first and foremost, you need Chris Paul to protect the basketball, right?
Yeah. Besides the obvious, Chris Paul, play better, please. The thing I think Phoenix needs to do is play quicker, push the pace here a little bit, you know, get opportunities with drag screens. You know, the Bucks have done a good job with the stagnant pick and rolls. They've done a good job with the Spain pick and rolls. They've struggled a little bit with that, you know, staggered into DHO for Booker. But get them moving, attack them earlier in the clock and get opportunities there. And I think that's where also you'd find the opportunities for Bridges, like Seth was saying earlier in the episode, and for those role players. But if you're playing so late up against the clock like they tend to do, and Chris is pretty slow bringing it up, it hurts their offense in that sense. They got to play quicker. I think if they push the tempo, try to find more drag screens, I think they'll be able to find some good stuff offensively.
So I've got to that point that game one was, I thought, the best they did that all series. And I got some stats from the folks at NBA Advanced Stats that over the course of the playoffs, the Suns have gotten their offense after off a dead ball. So taking the ball out of the basket or inbounding or stuff like that, with about 15 on the shot clock. In game one, in the first quarter, when they were really zipping, they were into their offense at 18.5 on average. And so for the game, it was 17 some. And it may not sound like a lot, but being into your offense two and a half, three seconds faster is just a huge advantage, especially when you have guys who are as adept at hunting a mismatch as like Paul or Booker can be. Just gives yourself so many chances to have for defensive breakdowns, for those open shots, for right, Booker to find the seam. Some of the slowdown is, I think, due to the Bucks changing things up. First of all, part of the reason they were able to play so fast in game one is PJ Tucker was guarding Paul and couldn't offer him any resistance at all. Yeah. Just let them like jog into their offense every time. And so Drew on Paul has done some of it, and also them just picking up earlier all over the court. But doesn't mean Phoenix has to say, oh, they're picking us up early, we got to walk it up. Like, okay, we'll get by the guy and play 5-on-4 a little bit then. I agree with you. That's something that would be a huge help for Phoenix. Just, you know, getting back to getting some system buckets. You know, that's something they've been very good at all postseason and were good at through game one and the first half of game two. And they've gotten away from that a little bit. And again, a good chunk of that is credit to Milwaukee, but also they can be better.
I think they need to get Mikal Bridges involved in the offense again. You know, I think in particular, I would come out of the gate trying to get him going. You know, these other guys are going to touch the ball a lot. They're going to have the ball in their hands. Ayton is going to get those system buckets that they generate. But we just saw Milwaukee's game plan is to take out Mikal Bridges and to take out these guys on the edges that are creating those open looks for Ayton. So I think I would probably come out and see if you can get him going. I also think that campaign. Game five is going to be an important campaign game because of exactly the reason that you mentioned. That is a dude that can really put pressure on the Bucks if they're picking him up high. And I think that that's something that, that we maybe we see a little bit more of. I don't know about you guys. For the Bucks, I guess, what are you going to do? Like, do you make any changes, or do you hope that what you've been doing just keeps on rolling?
Don't forget who you are. Don't forget you're the bigger team. Don't forget how you're playing. Giannis can't turn into a jump shooter. Don't forget like the details there that they got you there, you know, in those last, especially those last two games and things like that. I think ultimately it's same way we say CP's got to play better. Holiday, play a little better on offense. That's how it works, right? Just tell him and he'll play a little bit better, but make a few more shots type of deal. But just smarter possessions. It's not even about what shots he makes, but what shots he takes, and just smarter possessions from him on that end. So that's kind of my thing for the
Bucks.
Don't
forget about Brook Lopez. Like, that's, I think that's been, you know, when we've talked about Milwaukee kind of understanding their identity, a lot of those times have been like, oh yeah, this guy used to be a 20 point a game post scorer. And I'm not saying you like, you know, he stick his foot in the ground, stick his hand up in the air and go to work back to the basket, but get him on the offensive rebounds, get him on, you know, flashes to the basket, get him on, like, you know, against Atlanta, he had some really, really nice, like, Wade cuts through the elbow. Like, get some more of that going, because, you know, there's now, if he's attacking the basket as well as Giannis, different ways, obviously, that's two guys Phoenix has no chance of stopping except with DeAndre Ayton. And he can't cover both of them at once. So use that advantage a little bit more, I would say, as a way to if you're going to have to get ugly offense, that's a way you're going to be able to get some ugly offense.
Well, would you guys maybe run some screens to like create some switch mismatches for Brook? Like maybe right off the gate, try to just get him a couple of touches inside. Maybe you pick up some cheap fouls early on Crowder or something
know about
like that.
But just like, you know, they have so many of their sets, he kind of starts in the weak side corner. Just like run some kind of fake action on the strong side and have him just like sprint into something at the, you know, right at the front of the rim. And, you know, you might be able to draw some fouls that way. You might get the ball into him on that once or twice, but just make that weak side corner guy like think and pay attention to him. And either that will, you know, either Brook will get a look or that guy's attention will be more on Brook and that will give you more space in the main action.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that, Dave, in terms of trying to get him some looks right away to start off the bat. I think if I was going to be like, we have to get a guy a look, I think it'd probably be like Drew Holiday, and try to get him
right.
Try to get him a cup.
Well, the first play of the game, they're running it for Drew. They're gonna run that little Iverson cut with
right.
Giannis,
try to get him an easy look and things like that. I trust in Brook will find his way. You know, I just think, I'm with Seth every now and then call something for him. I think Seth with a great point of just don't forget Lopez, you know, is an important thing there. Just I think along the way he'll find his stuff. I don't feel like you have to go early in the game, I gotta establish Brook Lopez.
Sprinkle it in.
You know, and almost
sprinkle it in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's almost kind of the same point I have with the Bridges thing that you said. I wouldn't even feel like I'd have to go right at Bridges, because I feel like a lot of Bridges gets anyways is off of action. It's let's run offense and then we'll find he'll find his way.
Yeah. I mean, they've found him in the corner all year and then that corner's just disappeared. And so maybe you just lift him up a little bit, try to get him out.
Because he does
have,
I mean, he's not a great like face you up ball handler, but if you get him the ball with a little bit of crease, he can make something happen off of two or three dribbles. So
little 10-foot pull up that he's got in the lane has been nice. It's awkward,
there's a lot
of
times where he's just going to be bigger than Milwaukee's defender. So you get him, you know, you get him on the move and get him, you know, kind of pogo sticking to 6 feet. You get a pretty good clean look at that. So that's that, you know, again, just I think the way Mo put it is just run offense. I feel like that's something we've said so much for so many teams.
It's so frustrating.
All postseason is they get in these so ruts because like the other team like starts. Yeah, no, they, like, the run other team play. Switches once and it's like, oh shit, I got a mismatch. We got to go at this. It's like, no, just okay. You have a mismatch now. Make him guard you instead of like you have a mismatch, so you have to shoot. And you know. And this series seems like it's about the first time where Phoenix has found themselves in that rut where we've seen kind of throughout this postseason, like every other team kind of run up against that a little bit.
I would say the one other thing for Phoenix, and I mentioned it, I think maybe it was a daily ding with you, Dave, but I think they also got to lay off the crossbacks too much. Just run a straight pick and roll and let Ayton roll hard to the rim. They cross back so much, in particular Chris, that they know it's coming. So shake it up. Just come off the screen and let Ayton dive, and I bet you could probably get an easy lob or two off of that.
And on that crossback, the Bucks are switching it sometimes, and then you've got the rear defender basically catching up to the play. And so, yeah, we were talking about that. They've been doing that, I thought, too much the whole playoffs. You know, like when they're running into trouble, like against the Clippers and stuff, they were doing too much of that. So, yeah, I'm with you. Get back into just trying to attack the basket instead of getting into that pull-up range because you know it's there. I think you got to put more pressure on the rim if you're Phoenix.
Sorry.
Look, no, I was going to say that. Go ahead. I was going to say, we normally don't do predictions,
You're saying that, I have the mental image of how often, Devin Booker was, trying to put a defender in jail. And he's getting to a step back and making them. But as you say, he puts some pressure on the rim. Now either you're getting layups, you're getting free throws, you're getting the kick out to
Sucking that guy in from the corner. Or you're hopefully pulling that defender.
Get a lob to Ayton, get a kick out to Bridges. So yeah, just get to not just a shot you can make, but get to a great shot a little bit more.
But this is the thing that I think when we talk about drop coverage, we don't talk enough about. Like we talk about the fact that mid range is open, but we don't talk enough about how the corners are not. And the rim
That's
is
why you play
right?
drop coverage.
And so is why you play drop coverage. And so if you're the offense, you're playing into the defense's hand by taking that shot. And I think that Phoenix really needs to, again, play with force and go at the rim and really try to put Giannis in foul trouble. And I mean early. That would be my goal if I were them. All right, guys. I'm bad at predictions, and we said we weren't even doing it anymore. But we got a 3-game series, and I feel like I think I'm with Mo, but I want to hear Mo's reasoning on switching to the Bucks.
Yeah, no, I just think they've kind of found the formula that they need to go with to win it. Here's the thing. I don't know how Phoenix is going to stop the offensive rebounding onslaught, right? Like they're not hitting a growth spurt over the next few days. So, Mikal Bridges isn't 6'9" now, type of deal. So it's just a size disadvantage. And if the Bucks continue to attack the way they have been, I feel like they're going to steal a game in Phoenix. And I think that's kind of my main reasoning is I just feel like they've figured it out. They've figured it out at this point. And that is a big change. I didn't think they would. So got to give them credit here.
We've been doing our game by game predictions on The Athletic, and I'm pretty sure I'm in last place. So take this with all the salt you want. I picked the Bucks to win game five. I sort of feel like this is the part where Phoenix's inexperience maybe starts to show a little bit. And that's Ayton not knowing how to get involved and stay involved. This Bridges. That's campaign being a little out of control. So I think all of these kind of the other guys who've been so good for Phoenix are maybe just hitting that point. And Booker too, not like finding that right balance between bucket getting and distributing. I think this is where just hitting that wall of not having been there might be catching up to them a little bit. And wow, is that an unusual way for me to go, but still that's where I'm going.
It also could be a physical wall, right? Like it is the end of the season and this has been a long year and after another long year. And so we watched teams dropping like flies in the playoffs and we watched guys, I mean, man, we watched how many teams just look like they were completely out of gas. Thinking about the Nuggets, their last three games and maybe the Suns are out of gas. I don't know. I think the Bucks are just a better team right now, and they're playing better. And the momentum is all on their side. I don't want to, say Bucks in six, but I think they're going to win two of the next three. And this is they've got the blueprint. Can they stay this tough, this big, this mean?
That's just the question for me, Mo. Win by all three of us going the same way.
I know. Didn't we? And by like just a massive.
It's going to be by 1 point and a missed free throw because that's the commentator curse, right? No, well, not a missed free throw. A 10-second violation with no time on the clock.
Oh boy. No, it's going to be.
Giannis sped up. He looks more comfortable.
I'll say this though. It would be very fitting for the Milwaukee Bucks to win the finals in six, and Bucks in six being finally a true prediction.
If they win today and Brandon Jennings is not there center court on game six, Dan Smiechek, what are we doing if that doesn't happen? All right. Dustin Godsey, give me a call.
It's going to happen. Somebody get Trey. Get Trey on the line.
Yeah.
Get Trey on the line. We'll make this happen. All right. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week where we may, I guess, have an NBA champion. I'm not sure of the schedule. We could be guaranteed an NBA champion by the next time we record. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. This has been Nerder, She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show.